All right, you're on the Armsman with Glenn.
And Dave.
And Dave. We're doing a pre-recorded show today, so we're coming to you from the past in the future.
Yep.
How are we? In the present. Yeah, whatever we normally say, that's what we're doing. It's Labor Day. What the hell is even the freaking history of Labor Day, Dave? We were just kind of joking about how we celebrate Labor Day by taking the day off.
Yeah, we celebrate the day of working by taking the day off. No worries.
So let's see. Labor Day in the United States is a public holiday celebrated on the first Monday in September. It honors the American labor movement and the contributions that workers have made to the strength, prosperity, laws, and well-being of the country. It is the Monday of the long weekend, known as Labor Day weekend. It's considered the unofficial end of summer. It is recognized as a federal holiday. Beginning, blah, blah, blah.
Okay. So we're celebrating all the hard work people have done.
So take a day off to celebrate your hard work. We don't take a day off. Ever. But whatever. So, happy Labor Day. Happy day off.
If you get
a day off. If you're part of a government or a bank or something, you probably have a day
off.
They
get every day off.
If you're part of the trades or regular job, you probably don't have the day off. No. So, sorry.
It's like banks. It's happy blue sky day. Like, all right, got the day off.
Ah, cool. Yeah, banks.
They just have every holiday off.
Government workers get so many days off. It is pretty freaking amazing to me.
We're in the wrong racket.
Yeah, we are. We definitely are. So, happy Labor Day or whatever. Dave and I are not currently actually in the studio because we're taking the day off. So I guess we find out what hypocrites we are.
Whoops.
Oh, that's pretty funny. But I'm sure we're doing something else. But yeah, this day it was easier to do a pre-recorded show based on some scheduling conflicts that we had.
Scheduling conflicts.
Oh, shit. All right. Hey, remember everyone deployed. Remember there's still people out there, doing God's work to bad people. And, if you do nothing else, if you don't send care packages, if you don't really care, that sucks. But maybe just during your day, just take a break. Just take a second. Take a couple deep breaths. Look up at the big, beautiful sky. Look around you. And enjoy the fact that you are where you are because of the many sacrifices that have been made by men and women in uniform. And the people who've given their lives and their time and their effort and sacrificed so much for us. Just remember that. You don't have to be in debt to them. You don't have to thank a service member all the time. Like, that's not what I'm looking for. Just take a second and just look around and look at the freedoms that you do have. And I know the freedoms in this country are being eroded and taxation is theft and all that. I know. But just take a second to appreciate what you really do have and understand where it came from. It wasn't free, right? Someone paid the price so we could have the show on the air and have freedom of speech and build a business and do all that kind of stuff. Men and women that we know have paid the price for that. So maybe just kind of be appreciative of that, right? You don't have to send care packages. We talked about that kind of stuff on the show before. Just be appreciative. Patreon members, patrons, right? Yep. Blogs, show reviews. Don't miss out on that stuff. Yeah. Dave puts them up every week, a blog entry about the show topic, a show review about the previous week's show. And it's good information. It's a great way for you as a patron to get more for your patronage. It's also make sure that when Dave sends you emails, you're paying attention to him because that's part of sometimes how we're giving stuff away or we're giving you upgrades or we're giving you whatever. So make sure that, you're paying attention to the stuff that's coming to you from Patreon so that you make sure you're getting the most out of your patronage. Please send us your show ideas. Remember, it's your show requests that create shows like what we're going to do today. Right. So the topics that we talk about are the topics that we get for the most part from our patrons. And with the low number of patrons, surprisingly, that send us show ideas, there's like an 80% chance that if you send us a show idea, we're probably going to freaking do a show on it.
Oh, yeah.
At some point in the next 3 months, we're going to do a show on it. Mm-hmm. So make sure that you send us your show requests. All right. Giveaways. We just did a couple really cool giveaways. We did the HSGI Red, White, and Blue Tacos. Yeah. We did the Mag Carrier giveaway from We Plead the Second, the show we did a couple weeks ago that was live. So our next giveaway will start probably in a couple of weeks, so probably mid-September. we'll be doing another giveaway. I'm not sure what it is yet, right? And we definitely are going to be doing the Vortex giveaway as well.
Yeah.
I don't know, maybe we'll do that for September.
Maybe
we will. That's going to be an involved giveaway, though.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you're going to have to do something for that.
If you're curious what giveaways are going on or what information you need, look at Patreon. That's our hub right now. You can look at Facebook and all that kind of stuff, but more than likely it's all going to be on Patreon. So if you're curious, just find it there.
Tons of information there.
Yeah.
All right. Remember, the KE Arms code is ARMSROOM 2018, capital A, capital R, in arms and then room. ARMSROOM 2018. That'll save you some money over there at KE Arms. And Weepley the second, since we were just there, Training AZ, all lowercase, will get you 20% off. 15. I said 20 last time as well. Yeah. 15% off. I get you 15% off over at Weepley. And that's on any of their big four packages, mm-hmm. Stipple work, laser engraving, holsters, or Cerakoting. Man, that's a lot of money, 15% to save on some of their packages. Mm-hmm. You're going to go down there and get a full Cerakote, Stipple, you know, laser engraving package. Yeah. 15% is going to save you quite a bit of money.
Yep.
So make sure that you check that out. Other than that, you know, we don't really have any big news to get to because it's a pre-recorded show, so we have no idea what the hell has happened.
Yeah.
We're going to guess. Politicians are still corrupt. Good people did good things. Bad people did bad things.
Yeah.
And, the world continues to turn.
It's going.
And there you go. That's crazy. My predictions.
If that happens, man.
That happens. I'm on point. All right, so our topic this week, and obviously we've got a little bit more show this week, being a pre-recorded show. Our topic this week is going to be the Great Caliber debate and the, quote, air quotes, best self-defense gun.
Right. Yeah, because we know exactly what it is.
We do.
You have to listen to the whole show to find out.
All the way to the end.
All the way.
Someone right now is trying to fast forward. They get to the end, and it's just me going, here's the thing about calibers and best self-defense gun, and this is a question we get asked a lot. We're gonna get into the weeds a little bit on some of the stuff and talk about some of the things we've learned over the years. But just to sum it up, there's an easy way I've found to tell our students over independence training how to tell them what the best caliber is and what the best self-defense gun is. Mm-hmm. And I tell them like this: if it existed, we'd have it.
Yeah.
If it existed, all of our instructors would be carrying that gun in that caliber. Mm-hmm. Definitely. As private citizens, we can buy whatever we want. If it existed, the military wouldn't necessarily have it. The law enforcement community wouldn't necessarily have it because they're all based on budget and politics. Mm-hmm. But as private citizens, if the best thing existed,
yeah,
we would own it. Mm-hmm. We would have it. I would carry it around with me, whatever it was. It doesn't exist in a let-me-tell-you-what-it-is standpoint. I can tell you how to get it, but I can't tell you what to get.
Yeah.
Right? So first of all, let's start with caliber debate.
Well, even then, my biggest issue, and this is just going to be my little mini rant before we get into it.
Yeah, get fired up, Dave.
Is the fact that people go, well, you know, I got my 40 cal because, you know, my cousin's brother's barber's cousin killed somebody with it once and it worked. It's right. Like, okay, cool. Now, if we find the absolute best caliber, best gun, best whatever, the biggest issue that I've found, and maybe I'm more biased because of what we do, but it doesn't matter if you don't go out and practice and use it.
Mm.
You could have the world's greatest thing. For all we know, somebody's sitting on it and they know exactly what it is. It's the greatest combination, but we don't know because nobody goes out and does shit with it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, even if the best caliber, the best input that you can have on your firearm is to go out and actually use it in extreme circumstances, stress your abilities with your equipment. Don't just sit there and go, I got the world's greatest carry gun, and it's this fucking Gucci Glock. Some of those Gucci Glocks might run great, but they don't work them. If you work them, cool. Good for you. But anyways.
There's a quote by Tom Givens, who's a very well-known and well-respected, you know, instructor in our community. And he says, it's not how much you last practiced, it's when you last practiced. And I think that's really applicable to what we're talking about here, because a lot of times when people do start talking about caliber and self-defense gun, most of the shit that they're about to say, like you just mentioned, is anecdotal.
Yeah.
Right? It's a one or two time experience. There's guys in the military, for example, that might hate the M855 round, which is a 62 grain steel core penetrator, green tip ammo, right? And that's a standard issued round for most US military. There's other people who are like, in my time, I had no problem killing people with it. You know, I shot people, they went down, they stayed down, whatever. You know what I mean? There's same thing with 9mm. There's some people who carried the Beretta and they were like, this Beretta is a piece of shit. Mm-hmm. It does this, it does that. Me personally, I love the M9. I think the M9 is a great gun. Do I think it's perfectly suited for the military? No, not really. But it's a damn good gun, you know? Were some of the ones we issued pieces of shit?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Were some of the magazines we got junk and caused problems? Yeah. They were, you know, and that wasn't because the armorer wasn't doing his job or anything like that. It's just because sometimes you're going to get stuff that's just been used too much. And when it breaks on you, you know, and not the next guy. And so, yeah, that just kind of sucks. Some people will poo-poo the 9mm and go like, oh, yeah, when I was in wherever, Iraqistan, this guy was coming at me and I drew my 9 and, you know, my Beretta and I freaking pumped like 6 rounds into him and he didn't stop.
Six rounds. At him.
Yeah. Or even into him. They're like, I was hitting him, man. I could see the effect. It didn't stop. And then my, you know, then this freaking other guy shows up from this other unit or our freaking QRF showed up and they freaking put a bunch of 308 into the guy and just dropped him dead. So thus, 308 is better than 9mm, right? Well, of course it is. It's a rifle round versus a pistol round.
Yeah.
But the other thing is that now that kind of diminishes that 9mm round that much more in this person's mind. And it's like, well, let's see. Now you feel negatively about this caliber and this gun because it didn't do what you wanted to do in the moment that you wanted to do it. So based on your anecdotal story, let's take a look at some things.
Yeah.
First of all, what kind of ammunition were you using? Well, you're using 124 grain NATO spec, you know, Winchester ball ammo.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what you're issued.
Just making holes.
Right? So you're probably not doing that much. And that's assuming, based on another situation, where are you hitting? Now, I've been through the Army's pistol marksmanship program. It's not incredible. Most people don't go through it a lot. A lot of people get issued pistols and may only have to qualify, do that thing once a year. They never get any other time with their pistol. They suck with their pistol because they're used to shooting a carbine and they're not very good with it. So now they're not even really getting good hits. And we know based on 8,000 available stories or way more than that, that people can be hit lots of times with handgun rounds. There's 17 times, 23 times, all kinds of stories out there. Even with good jacket hollow point ammunition and still not get the desired effect of stopping them, excuse me, because they're bad hits.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we're looking at shot placement. We're looking at, you know, round selection. We're looking at what were the circumstances of the individual we're talking about here. Was he all jacked up on cot? You know, was he was he all messed up on opiates? Was, you know, was he just a hard motherfucker? Like, what? Yeah, like,
he just didn't want to die.
Yeah, I mean, like, what are some of the circumstances surrounding the individual that you were shooting? Maybe you were shooting the dude and he had body armor on and you didn't even freaking know about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or maybe you were shooting rounds and they were hitting his equipment. Maybe you didn't even freaking hit him.
Yeah.
You know? And so now we can't base it possible. On this ammunition at all.
You can't miss from that close.
But I was in the Army or whatever. Like, yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure that's fine. But
so the old revolver debate. If you can't get it done in six... And what's the point?
Yeah, so then you run into stuff like that. Again, this is anecdotal idea of people making their gun selections. I've had people be like, yeah, I carry a revolver because, you know, yeah, can't get it done in 5 rounds or 6 rounds. You know, most self-defense revolvers are going to be 5. Most full-size are going to be 6. And they go, yeah, if you can't get it done in 5 rounds or if you can't get it done in 6 rounds, you can't get the job done. Like, first of all, here's something I always know about those people. They don't know shit about combat.
Mm.
And I'm going to define combat because I'm going to use that term a couple of times in the show, I think. I'm going to define combat as this. If you're in a opposition with another human being or multiple human beings where life is the prize, you are in combat.
Mm.
Right? That is kind of my personal definition of combat. So you can be in combat in Iraqistan. You can be in combat in your living room. You can be in combat in the freaking parking lot of, you know, Safeway. You can absolutely be in combat just about anywhere if the prize is life. Is punching a drunk dude at the bar combat? No, that's not. You might be using some combatives, but you're not in a combat situation if life is not the prize, right? So first thing I can know by most people who talk about if you can't get it done 5 rounds or 6 rounds or whatever, you can't get it done, is that they have very little concept of what actual combat is. They're thinking about how they engage a target. Man, I pull that revolver out. I dump 5-6 rounds in the chest of that target, into his face. I'd fuck him up. Like, yeah, you would, for sure. If you put all 5 or 6 of those rounds in their high center chest or in their face, yes, you're going to mess them up. Is that going to kill them? Maybe not. Is it going to stop them? Maybe not. They are also not a compliant, non-competitive that's target.
Hoping that they just turn into a cardboard target in your living room. Just
they're gonna move. You're gonna move. It's gonna be dark. They might have a weapon. They might be coming towards you. They might be shooting back. There's a lot of other extenuating circumstances here that, you know, might help you miss a little, cause you to miss a little.
Maybe.
So things like that are annoying. I was talking to a guy one time. I might have told this story on the show before. I don't remember, but it's just so freaking stupid that I have to repeat it.
Yeah. Not like anybody can stop you.
Yeah. Plus, I have the microphone and you don't, so you will listen to everything I have to say. But I was talking to this guy and in a social setting, not a friend or anything like that, just in a social setting where I was forced to talk to this human being and, you know, small talk, hey, what do you do for a living? Like stuff like that. So this guy's like, oh yeah, you know, I heard you like to shoot and everything, but yeah, I do, you know, I definitely like to shoot. And he's like, yeah, I like to shoot too, you know, and a couple guns. I'm like, yeah, that's really cool. And yeah, you carry a gun for self-defense? I'm like, I don't know, maybe I do and maybe I don't, you know, like, I'm not going to sit here and tell you about that. I don't know who the hell you are. He's like, yeah, well, you know, my wife delivers newspapers in the morning and she's got she keeps a little .22 revolver, in her console. And I go, okay, for shooting squirrels. I don't know. Why are you telling
me? They commonly steal
papers. You know? And he's like, well, it's because then if someone comes up and tries to rob her, you know, because she's out early in the morning, she can just grab that pistol and she can just shoot him in the face. And I go, oh, okay. Because, I mean, who's going to take, and like 22 revolvers, like 8 rounds, you know, he's like, who's going to take like 8 rounds to the face with a 22? And I go, okay. So can I ask you a question? How often do you teach your wife to draw that pistol from the console? Well, I mean, it's not really that hard. And I go, okay. How often do you teach your wife to draw the pistol from the console and then shoot? She's going to have to turn her body in that seat and shoot potentially through auto glass. When was the last time you taught her to shoot through the side window? You know, and how that's going to disrupt her view. And she, if she's in late or early in the morning, then it's going to be dark, right? So does she have some kind of light or some kind of system she's going to use to properly not only identify her target and make sure she's not shooting the wrong person, but also to make sure that she's actually got the sights lined up on a target that's fully illuminated so that she can actually get good hits? And when you guys go out and practice and train with this, which I'm sure you do often, how often does she only shoot in the face? Is that what she's well-trained to do? Is she well-trained to just dump freaking all 8 rounds through this little, you know, pistol? Oh, and by the way, is it single action or a double action revolver? Mm-hmm. So, of course, all this information gets this guy thinking. And instead of him going like, oh, shit, I never thought about any of that. He's like, well, you know, starts getting all defensive about it. You know, like, oh, well, you know, I mean, it's. And I go, hold on. I am really curious, though, about the revolver question. Is it a single action? It was a freaking single action. It was like a Ruger Bearcat or something like that. And I go, so you gave your wife a single action .22 revolver to defend herself with? Yeah. And she's just going to, quote, unquote, dump all 8 rounds in this guy's face with a freaking single action revolver? Are you high, man? Have you ever done that? You try that shit against someone who is a little more determined, they're going to mess you up. And that's the unfortunate thing about a lot of these anecdotal stories. A friend of ours, Josh, who's been on the show before and is a police officer with a local agency and does some training with us and stuff like that. You can find him actually on Instagram as Modern Paladin, and he does a really good job. I think he's got some great posts, really, really good stuff. And one of the things that he says is, you know, having dealt with a lot of law enforcement, and he works a lot in their training department. And so one thing he says that I really like is he says the reason he believes most police officers have survived their violent encounters isn't because they're good. It's because someone wasn't determined enough to kill them.
Yeah.
You know, and so that's the other part about a lot of the information that we get from people about these stories. Well, one time when I was a kid, this guy tried to break in my house and my dad pointed a .45 at him and said, get out of the house. And the guy ran away. So,
45.
Yes, because he was looking down the barrel of a .45, you know, and you go, okay. Or, you know, he didn't want to die. He didn't want to get shot. He knew that if he got shot, it was going to reduce his ability to do his job, which is steal shit from people. So all he did was run away from your house and go to another house, right? It's not the first time he's looked down the barrel of a gun. Might have been your dad's first time ever pointing a gun at somebody. This guy's not scared of the gun itself. He's scared of the injury or the incapability that it brings with it, right? He's not necessarily scared of the gun. And he's not, he wasn't there to hurt you guys. He was there to probably take your stuff, you know? He probably wasn't there to murder your family, because if he was there to murder your family, that gun wouldn't have stopped him. And quite honestly, he wouldn't have gotten caught before the murdering started, more than likely, right? Mm-hmm. You would have known he was there to murder you because he woke up while he was stabbing the shit out of you, you know, or lighting your house on fire while you tied to the bed or something like that. Like, that's someone who's determined to kill somebody, mm-hmm. you know, not just there to take someone's stuff. Yeah, if I'm a criminal and I'm like, I'm going to go rob some people today and someone pulls a gun on me, the likelihood of me getting the hell out of there, like, I consider myself a violent person. It's like, the likelihood of me getting the hell out of there is pretty damn good. Yeah. I'm not going to be like, oh, you pulled a gun on me? Well, let's fucking do this. Like, yeah. No, I don't want to get hurt because I need to go steal some stuff. If that's what I'm here to do,
I still need to get paid.
Getting shot is going to prevent me from stealing stuff, right? But if I'm like, I want to go murder this person today, mm-hmm. I'm going to murder them. Whether they pull a gun or a knife or not, they're going to have to kill me to stop me.
Yeah.
Right. So you look at these anecdotal stories and all the bullshit that they bring along with them. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you my anecdotal experience on firearms, right? My own personal anecdotal experience that comes from a literal lifetime of firearms and their various applications, from recreational to combative to competitive to hunting and everything in between. With all kinds of weapons, from really huge ones that mount to freaking tank treads and get dropped from freaking airplanes, to really small ones that you can literally tuck in your pocket. And again, everything in between. Here's my anecdotal experience, because that's what it is. Never shoot a small caliber man with a large, or a large caliber man with a small caliber bullet. Right? That's my anecdotal experience. Apply violence frequently and often. If violence is necessary, apply it frequently and often. Be violent when violence is presented to you. The tools of the trade don't have as much impact on the outcome as your ability to apply them properly. Mm-hmm. Shot placement, violence, things like that. You can be the best marksman in the world and not be violent. We see it over and over and over again in our classes. When we do force-on-force violent classes, think about the last time you were in a force-on-force class, right? Mm-hmm. In the shoot house with a couple people that we had, and they're doing a private class.
Yeah.
Think about those two people mm-hmm. who have similar training, for the most part, similar understanding, similar experience, mm-hmm. all right, for the most part. And think about now, how did they apply violence differently to you?
Oh, it was way different. And yeah, like, I'd keep the same level of violence too. So it wasn't like, oh, I escalated with one over the other. I didn't apply more pressure to one. And yeah, it was just different. It's just the mindset. One was a little bit more, I wouldn't even say a little bit more. She was definitely more hesitant to apply the violence. Mm.
But she's a tough person.
Oh yeah. She's not. Yeah. Yeah. She's not. This a is, pushover. She's,
you know, Krav Maga instructor, yeah. Really, really experienced, you know, shooter, mm-hmm. Really, really fit, you know, physically good condition, really solid mentality. Definitely
capable to do what?
Absolutely capable to commit violence. Like, this is not, we're not talking about a soccer mom here. Mm-hmm. We are literally talking about the kind of person I would say, like, if it was her or most other people I know and mm-hmm. I had to go into a fight, I would have picked her.
Yeah.
You know, because at least her capability mm-hmm. was there.
And even he had some hesitation.
Some hesitation.
He was not as long. Mm-hmm. He picked it up quick, and they both did, giving them both credit that mm-hmm. they figured it out. But he was definitely not as hesitant. There was times where he was just like, I don't care. I'm doing this.
Now, here's an interesting thing between those two individuals. Excuse me. Dry throat today, is he has committed violence before in a very different way. Mm-hmm. In a very, very, very different way, he has committed violence before. And so I think because of that, he's a lot more ready to engage in it. Mm-hmm. And he's been in combat before in a very, very different way.
Yeah,
he's been in combat, you know, in an almost impersonal way. He'd been in combat, but that idea and understanding of what's required and what's necessary, I think definitely help.
there's a mental side of it that I don't think a lot of people take into consideration, that wall. And I definitely think she hit that wall when she went and said, I have to become violent. Am I okay with it? What am I going to do? What am I willing to do? And she had that conversation almost with herself during that time. And people don't think about it ahead of time. And it's something we try to teach in our basic classes, anything that deals with violence or defensive pistol or handgun, whatever. But it's something that people just don't think about, that mental side of it. It's not that hard to go through. It costs you no money to go through the mental aspect
preparation.
Yeah, it's something that you have to think about and understand. Even then, it's still not going to make it perfect for you. You're still going to have probably that hesitation. If you've never committed that kind of violence before, you're going to have a hesitation. You're going to have some sort of just hold back. But
now the good thing is that throughout training, and we'll keep talking about these two specific people, in training, as it progressed, she got more willing and more capable because now she's being exposed to it. Yes, in a training environment. Yes, in an environment where life isn't the prize. We're simulating that life is the prize, but life is not truly the prize, and there's a huge difference there, right? But she gets to the point where by the end, she is much more aggressive. She is much more violent because she's had a better exposure now to that. Same thing with him, right? The hesitations he did have were gone.
Yeah.
You know, and he was moving away from the hesitations that he did have. So what we typically see in classes when we do that kind of stuff, and that was kind of a little bit more specific to a couple individuals who are a tough case study because they're both really, really capable people.
Yeah.
But if you look at like a general open enrollment class that we do, let's say close contact handgun, we'll start the shooting in the beginning of the day with some live fire stuff. And people are, they are like violent, man. Mm-hmm. They are moving and shooting on targets. They got this great technique. Mm-hmm. They're just hammering holes in these freaking targets. They are killing, you know, absolutely kicking ass. And then we put them in a scenario where they have to communicate with people, an unknown situation. We don't know what's going to happen. We don't know when it's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And you watch their skills just come apart. Mm-hmm. Because when the violence begins, not when the shooting begins, when the violence begins, their skills come apart.
Well, it's something people don't naturally practice. You might practice arguing like with a spouse or whatever, but arguing with somebody or getting verbal with somebody who's not being compliant or not reacting, that's one of my favorite things to do when I role play, is just to not react how they expect you to react.
Right.
You need to stop doing that. No, fuck you.
Yeah.
I'm not going to stop doing that. And they go, wait, what do you mean?
It's always great because it puts them in this loop of they're like, wait, what?
Wait, no, you need to stop. No, I'm not going to
nope.
stop. But do it. No. Yeah, it's something that people, they don't really have a way of practicing it. And it's kind of hard to
practice. Well, they do have a way of practicing it if they have other people to practice with.
Right.
As an individual, it's a little bit harder. But if you can find yourself a training group or go to a couple of classes or you know, you find yourself some people, a spouse or a boyfriend, girlfriend or a friend or whatever that'll help you run through these kinds of scenarios, then you can practice it. And it's important. The more exposures you get to that kind of violence, the more capable you are of committing violence.
If you practice the force on force, too, that's the other thing that people find out is how capable they are. Mm-hmm. They end up finding out, yeah, I am capable to confront this situation and become violent and be successful. Because you see that situation in almost every single person that we have. And why I also love being in the shootouts with them is to see that moment of when they're like, holy crap, am I capable of this?
Am I actually capable of doing
this? Can I do this? And then when they finally get that click of like, yeah, I can totally do this. It's fun. It's fun when people actually start trying to fight back because I know they can. And when they do, it makes it a lot more fun than just shooting people. And also noticed like we haven't talked about one single caliber yet.
Yeah, we're not even talking about the equipment yet, right? Because we're just talking about when we talk about the great caliber debate, the best self-defense gun, which is the topic of today's show. It's a moot point because we're talking about self-defense, meaning violence against somebody else who's trying to commit violence to you. Before we even get to the kind of equipment we need to be using, we have to have the right mentality and the capability to commit violence. Here's the facts. I know people who are insanely more violent than I could ever be. These people have committed violence against humans in close quarters to a level that the majority of people who live and die on this earth will never experience. Mm-hmm. Tools, they don't even care.
No.
And if you ask these types of individuals, well, what's your favorite whatever? They're like, what's available?
Yeah.
Well, am I beating this guy to death with a rock? Okay.
That's my favorite, that rock. Yeah.
You know, what am I doing? It's part of the reason that I always enjoy, one of my favorite things to do, and if you guys are followers of the Arms Room Instagram or Facebook, you know, you've seen a few months ago, I put up all those Medal of Honor citations from the Heroes Hard as Hell match we went up to earlier this year. And I love reading Medal of Honor citations. Not, unfortunately, so many of them are posthumous, right? But I don't like reading them because I'm like getting a hard on because these guys are being violent. I like to watch it. I at least like to look at all the different things that they do. It's always like Sergeant so-and-so engaged the enemy with his carbine. And when that freaking ran out of ammunition, he jumped on an enemy, you know, destroyed an enemy position with a grenade, detached the whatever PKM machine gun from that position and engaged the opposing position with the enemy's weapon. And when the ammunition was exhausted from that, he drew his knife and he charged into the next, you know, trench position and he stabbed everyone to freaking death and engaged in, you know, hand-to-hand combat with eight people. And then he picked up a rock and he ran into the next position. It's like, violence.
Yeah.
That's the only thing this guy is doing right now. He is just grabbing whatever. He's not like, this gun is an inappropriate caliber. Oh,
damn it.
You know what I mean? Oh, I don't want this gun. It's not effective enough. He's just like, guns! It's like the game Doom. He's just like, gun pickup, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, pick up the gun, shoot until you're out of ammo, and you're like, well, I need another gun, you know, just like running around. Like, that's basically how it works. And when you read a lot of these stories, that's what these people have in common.
Mm-hmm.
What these Medal of Honor, a lot of Silver Star recipients, some of them who should be freaking Medal of Honor, what they have in common is not, they don't list like, he was engaging the enemy with his M4A3. You know, 5.56 millimeter, you know, carbine. They don't even say, because it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
The fact that he laid out 18 people before he died, that's what matters.
Yeah.
You know, I've read a couple of Medal of Honor citations recently that, earlier ones from earlier wars that just, I mean, it's like, you know, they find the guy with his freaking pistol in his lap, surrounded by the enemy kind of stuff. You know what I mean? And it's just like, holy cow, like this guy's fought it out. They're not like, look at this shitty 9mm. This guy that he killed got shot like 8 times. What a piece of shit caliber.
Yeah.
They're like, this dude freaking laid waste to these other humans very violently right before he died or managed to escape or whatever. And I was like, that's what these guys have in common. And gals, you know, we don't have that yet, you know, Medal of Honor female recipients, but there's definitely violent women out there too. So when I say guys, I'm kind of being all inclusive. Sorry, gender bias, gender neutral, whatever. I'm sure if you think that way, you're probably not listening to our show. But the idea here is that the mentality, the propensity, the capability to do violence, remember the will without the skill is nothing. The skill without the will is nothing. I can really, really want to be able to do something and not be able to do it. I want to be an astronaut, but I can't be an astronaut. I have the skills to be a fucking astronaut.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Not even close. But I sure want to be an astronaut. I want to join the Space Force. I want to go to space. I want to find aliens. I want to kill them, right? That's what I want to do. I travel to foreign lands and, you know, kill the locals, right? I want to go to space now and do that. You know, let's go to space and kill the locals. But I can't. Because I don't even know what it takes to be an astronaut. So I have this great will, I have this strong desire, but I don't have the skills to be an astronaut. And on the other side of things, if I have the great skills to be an astronaut, I have everything that needs to happen to be an astronaut.
You don't want to be.
But I don't want to be an astronaut. Then there you go. It's the same thing.
Yeah.
So it's like the will without the skill without the will, they're equally useless in a violent confrontation.
I always think it's interesting that...
Notice we didn't mention equipment yet, right?
Oh, yeah.
We're still not talking about equipment.
Yeah. I always love that we kind of idolize, like, on the dramatic side, it's Hollywood and stuff, but we're like, oh, like, John Wick, like, all these badasses you see in movies, all this stuff, like, man, he just picks up everything. He's just a badass. I wish I could do that. I want to do that. I want to... Everything... And you even read these Medal of Honor recipients and stuff, like you were saying, like, look at what they did. It was all based on skill. It's like the people you're talking about, like, they don't care. Because they're capable with it. It's stuff that we try to do as instructors to become proficient with every piece of equipment. So it doesn't matter. Like, oh, no, that's not a Glock. No, I can't shoot that.
I don't shoot Glocks well. I always like when people say stuff like, I don't shoot that gun well.
So you don't shoot guns well.
So you don't shoot well.
Yeah.
It's like people, it's like one of the comedians I like, Daniel Tosh, who's of course kind of a controversial guy. I like listening to it. He just says stuff to piss people off. Him, like Louis C.K. Like some of my most favorite comedians are the ones who just say stuff just to piss people off, just to get their reaction, because then they laugh, because like those reactions are hilarious.
That's what they want.
They want that reaction. And so he says like test takers. I hope I don't offend anybody here. If I do, whatever. But he goes, he's like, oh, I think it's funny when people say, you know, I'm a bad test taker. No, you mean you're stupid. You're not good at the part where we find out what you know. You know, like, to me, it's kind of like that. You know what I mean? Like, if you don't have the capability to do this, then...
Yeah.
You can shit talk all you want and say how great you are. You don't have the capability to pull it off. Mm-hmm. That's physical. That's mental. The understanding. You know, is it people who don't have the simple understanding of who their enemy is? They don't even know the enemy. Mm-hmm. They don't know who they are or where, what they might look like. They don't understand the kind of tactics that are going to be used against them because they're not studying that. And honestly, just understanding a lot of that keeps me more from that.
Yeah.
If I go into an environment thinking like my opposition,
yeah,
the likelihood I'm going to get ambushed by the opposition is pretty low. Not impossible, but low. Lower than it might be otherwise.
One of the best ways to keep yourself alive is to avoid places that will kill you.
Yeah. From an outdoor survival perspective, right? Part of the reason we stay alive is because we recognize bad weather. Yeah. We recognize when we're getting lost. We recognize when things are taking a turn for the worst, and we stop, right? We think, we observe, we plan, the acronym STOP, and then we figure out how to not be in that bad situation. Mm-hmm. We don't just keep death spiraling to the inevitable.
Yeah.
And so because we understand that, then we're not going to find ourselves in bad situation. It's the same thing with violence. If I understand my opposition, if I understand my enemy, then I can actually ambush him.
Yeah.
And certainly if the ambush happens, I'm going to be a lot better at the counter ambush because I understand his mentality. I understand what he's after. If I know the locals, if I know the natives, so to speak, I know who's around me in my community, in the communities I'm going to, I've studied those people and I go, look, in this environment, at this time, with these types of people, here's the kind of language they're going to use. Here's how they're going to talk. Like here's literally what they're going to say. Here's some things that they might say that I need to know about because they're like little local code words for certain things, right? So I need to know that kind of stuff. I need to know how people around me are going to act. Am I in an environment where it's mostly drugs? Am I in an environment where it's, you know, a lot of gangs? Am I in environments where it's a freaking cartel? Am I in environments where it's terrorism? Am I in environments where it's, you know, environmental radicals? You know, like, who am I up against? And what level of violence are they truly capable of so I can appropriate myself to that, right?
Just apply. It's basic life skills that people actually do consistently, but they don't apply it to every aspect.
They don't apply it to violence.
Yeah. They don't apply it to anything.
So now if we're actually going to start looking at some equipment, all right?
Now,
so we could go on for this topic forever. It's definitely one of my favorite topics, is that the tool you put in my hand is just the tool you put in my hand. What's available? You know, to kind of go back to what I was joking about with Daniel Tosh, when people say like, I don't shoot that gun well. I'll agree with that. There's some guns I shoot better than others, definitely. My competition guns are different than my hunting guns, which are different than my self-defense guns, right? My daily carry is not the gun that I love to shoot, but it's the gun I like to fight with because it's a good fighting gun, not a great shooting gun. It's a great fighting gun, right? Glock makes a great fighting pistol. Not a very fun gun to shoot. I don't shoot them typically as well as I shoot other pistols for any number of reasons, from the ergonomics to, you know, the way the trigger's set up to, and I can modify some of this, of course, but they're not my favorite guns to shoot. Do I shoot other guns better? Yeah, sure. That's normal. The gun's going to fit me better. It's going to fit my body better, whatever. Yeah. But I can still pick up any gun and do what needs to be done. I can still pick it up and I go, I've never shot this gun before. Let me check out this, you know, how does the action work? If I need to scoop up this gun, can I even operate this thing? Do I know how to load this thing? Do I know how to shoot this thing? So Call of Duty always kind of cracks me up, you know, because you're just picking up whatever and using it effectively. They're always zeroed in. They're always perfectly zeroed. Red dot hits perfectly from freaking zero to 500 meters. No holdovers required.
Nope.
You know, if I was going to develop a good Call of Duty game, dude, it would be like you pick up a gun and just randomly not zeroed. It always shoots to the right or something. You know what I mean? You pick up the gun, it's only got half a magazine, and now you have to figure out how to do a reload because you've never shot this Tabor before or whatever. You know what I mean? You pick up a gun and it's got no optic, you know, or whatever. You have to hold over. Maybe it is zero, but now you have to hold over, you know? So you're trying to hold over with irons on a target at 500 yards, not just holding dead on him like you do in the freaking game. So, that's how I would do it. People would hate that game. No one would play it. Everyone would be like, dude, just like real life. I'm like, yeah, you suck there too. But that's why people play games, to escape from reality, right?
Yeah.
So let's take a look at caliber for a minute here. Modern calibers and modern bullet design negate the majority of old anecdotal experience and information that was once available. The 9mm used to be relatively anemic. When it was first starting to be utilized by law enforcement and military, there wasn't a lot of great rounds available for it. Nowadays, there are. So to have the 9mm versus 40 versus 45 debate, that's for people who don't have any other things to talk about, or for people just giving each other a hard time, you know. But you know, I was recently in a class where I got told as a student that, you know, the Glock was the most unsafe gun ever created because it doesn't have an external safety, and that 9mm wasn't going to effectively stop anyone not as good as a 45. And that I should be carrying like a 1911 and 45. Which is interesting because in my training that I've been doing for the last decade, I don't see as many Glocks malfunction as I do 1911s. Mm. I thought that was interesting because I'm like, so you like an external safety, but you're willing to potentially have a malfunction over having a gun that's definitely going to run but has no external safety? Mm. Interesting. This is a pretty well-known instructor. Old school guy, but pretty well known. Wow. That is some crotchety horse shit, you know? and it really turned me off. And luckily, the other instructor who kind of took over the class after that was really good and wasn't silly like that. But I'll tell you, man, straight out of the gate, to hear something like that in a class, it really turned me off. You know, like, dude, that's not even based on your anecdotal experience, you know? Because you don't even have experience with a 9 not stopping someone and a 45 stopping someone. Like, you don't even have that experience. So you can't even draw from that. There is no ultimate pistol caliber. Look, a 500 Smith & Wesson, that would definitely knock someone around.
Well, that's the thing. They like to take other people's advice and information. And I get it. Don't not go out and talk to people and try to gather information from them. But the best way you can find out information on even guns themselves is to go out and handle them. Mm-hmm. Find out, does this gun fit me well? Does it not fit me well? Do I like how it shoots? Do I like the recoil? Do I like this hunting gun? Do I like this company? Do I like this company? Don't go. You can get information from like local law enforcement, find out what they're carrying and go, okay, that's a pretty good idea. But also keep in mind that they always go with the lowest bidder on everything.
And they're issued that.
Yeah.
It's not like that. If you ask your cop buddy who's not a shooter, and most of them aren't real shooters, they're just they're issued a gun for their job and they learn how to use it because they have to. And you go, hey, what's the best gun? He's going to go, whatever's on my hip. That's my choice, mm-hmm. right? It's a good gun. I shoot it okay. I qualified with it. It's a fine piece of equipment. Was he offered 10 options? No. He was like, this is the duty gun that you're going to have to freaking shoot. The same thing with being in the military. Like, I wasn't offered a lot of options on what we got to carry. It was like, here's your carbine. Here's your pistol. And here's your belt fed. Like, these are the guns you use. I'm like, well, you know, I really prefer a different gun. What else you got back there? You know, like, give me a couple options here. Yeah. Like, that's not how that goes. So if you were to ask anybody who's been issued a firearm at any point in their time, like, what's the best gun? They may honestly say, hey, I hate that gun. I have to use it, but I hate it. Mm-hmm. Does that mean it's not going to work for you? Yeah. No, it means it doesn't work for them for whatever reason, you know? So then you also run into the issue, back to caliber for just a second, you also run into the issue of selection, again, made on anecdotal experience. Oh, in this case, the guy was shot There's a really good example, actually, in Maryland many years ago where the FBI did this really, really in-depth ballistic review, so to speak. The review itself is amazing. It's complete with autopsy photos and information about caliber and everything. If anybody wants it, email us info@trainingaz.com and I'll send it to you. It's a badass, really, really badass review of this law enforcement shooting. The FBI came in and looked at caliber. And the initial thought, so this guy got hit like 17 times. No drugs or anything like that. You know, again, just got hit a lot, didn't want to die. And he was, you know, engaging police as well. And ironically, I think with a 1911 45, that he was single loading, or not single loading, but he had one magazine and a loose box of rounds. Mm-hmm. And he was loading the magazine, emptying it, and then loading it again while being engaged from multiple positions. But they hit him several times with 40, and then a SWAT guy showed up, hit him several times with 5.56. And it based on the people on site, they were like, we've been hitting him with 40 cal and he's not stopping. And then SWAT team showed up and they stopped him with 5.56, which then led people, and, you know, kind of rightfully so based on one anecdotal experience, that their 40 cals were ineffective and that the 5.56 was more effective. Not true. They didn't hit him anywhere that mattered. They didn't even hit him anywhere that mattered really with the 5.56. They shot his feet a bunch of times so he'd fall down. That's what stopped his ass. And then someone put a freaking 40 cal in his forearm. He couldn't hold his pistol anymore.
Yeah.
You know, it was like what stopped the guy was literally breaking down his mechanical systems, not the choice of caliber, because all their shots were junk. Mm-hmm. None of them hit the vitals, even the 5.56 ones. Mm-hmm. But so it kind of showed up and was like, damn, we need to get ourselves some more patrol rifles because the 5.56 is a freaking fight stopper. Like, that's not actually true here. That's not actually what happened. From a quick overview, you'd be like, damn, the guy showed up at 5.56 and they shut that shit down. That is true, but it's not actually how it happened. So again, those anecdotal experiences then lead people to start rattling off at the mouth about stuff that's not actually true. So if I was going to select any semi-automatic handgun today, I would say get a 9 millimeter, get a 40 Smith & Wesson, or get a 45 ACP. If I was going to list them in order, I don't like the 40 Smith & Wesson. I think it's too snappy a recoil. I don't think the round is balanced well enough to give me the best performance. So I typically just go with 45 or 9. And if I was going to, you know, my number two choice would be a 45. And my number one choice is 9mm. Why? Because modern bullets are really effective. I can hold a lot of ammunition, and it's really inexpensive for me to shoot.
See,
I like a 45 too.
Based on my personal experience, over 45, I would choose 40 over 45 because I just like the way 40s. I like how it shoots. It just, for me, the snap is not an issue. I like the recoil on it. So if I wanted to go heavier, 40 is my choice.
So there you go.
Weird.
You know? And it's like, does it matter? No, yeah. Because if I take a 9 and you take a 40 and we both come up against an equal target and we both put good shot placement on that target, it's going to work. Period.
Supposedly. Or it might not.
Or might not.
Yeah.
Right?
There's just too many variables in situations that, like you said, it could be, they could be drugged out. They could just not want to die. Like that guy, he just said, I am not, unless you shut this shit down.
He did end up dying eventually, but because he got shot. He did get shot a lot.
Yeah.
But he wasn't dead right there. He was shot a lot of times and still shooting back.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't matter. You might have the absolute perfect thing, get perfect shot placement and still, because of whatever reason, they don't want to die. Or they're not going to die or whatever, then they don't die. And it doesn't mean that that was bad and that you were bad in that situation. Or it's, there's so many variables. You can't say one thing is the best in this situation.
Well, and you're also looking at, like, there's other calibers, man. The 10 millimeter is badass, dude. Mm-hmm. A 357 SIG is an incredible cartridge. There's great pistol calibers out there like that that are phenomenal. Why aren't we shooting them? Because they're expensive.
Expensive as hell.
They're not as easy to find. But yeah, you want to carry a 10 mil. I mean, they make them in Glock. They make a Glock and 357 SIG. You know, you get a 357 SIG. Get a freaking 10 mil. They're kick-ass rounds, man. They're badass. I don't choose to shoot them because they're not as easy to get. They're more expensive to shoot. I shoot a lot. In theory, I could shoot a 9 and carry a 10. Or I could shoot a 9 and carry a 357 SIG. That'd be fine. I could do that too. I just choose not to do that.
Yeah.
But again, it's 6 to 1 half dozen to another. A 500 Smith & Wesson. Mm-hmm. You could carry that. They make that little snubby five shot freaking 357 or 500 Smith & Wesson revolver. Dude. Yeah, you lay some 550 caliber freaking weight on someone's ass,
yeah,
you're going to change their behavior. Mm-hmm. Why don't I carry it? Because it's ridiculous to carry something like that. My follow-up shots aren't going to be as good. It's super expensive to shoot and train with. The gun itself is super heavy. It's not practical. You know, now if I'm hunting bears, you know, or I'm out salmon fishing in Alaska, yeah, I'm going to carry a big old freaking 500 or 480 or 460 or 454 or something like that. Would those also be good for self-defense? Hell yeah.
Mm-hmm.
With good shot placement. Because if I shoot a guy in the low leg with a 500, I'm not going to blow his leg off. It's not going to stop him as well as if I put a 9mm or two or three of them in the center of his chest.
Mm-hmm.
Shot placement still trumps your freaking caliber selection.
Weird.
Now, let's talk about the best self-defense gun. And what time we got left? About 10 minutes? What we got?
Sure.
Dave's timer? He doesn't know.
Sure.
Thanks for nothing, guy.
We got like 5 minutes.
Okay. Well, we'll wrap it up then with talking about this, the best self-defense gun. And usually when it comes down to self-defense gun questions, people want to ask us handgun, carbine, or shotgun.
Mm-hmm.
And my answer is always, what's your application?
Yeah.
For me, in my home, I like a handgun. Oh, do I want a long gun? Of course. But a handgun is something I can keep really handy.
Mm-hmm.
It's easy for me to maneuver around a typical suburban home, which is what I live in. Lots of weird corners and short hallways and stuff like that. Not as easy to move with a long gun in those kinds of environments. Staircases and shit like that. It's easier for me to maneuver with a small compact handgun. Easier for me to do things one-handed with a handgun.
Mm-hmm.
Open doors, move through spaces, grab somebody, defend myself, grab my kid or my wife or whatever. So that's a lot easier to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I choose a handgun with a weapon light attached. I like that too. So personally, any defensive firearm should have a light attached, in my opinion. But do I think it's the best? It is for my situation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how about a carbine? I do have a home defense carbine. I also have a home defense shotgun. They're both readily available for the most part, you know, considering the fact that you still have to get to them. They're not right next to the bed or attached to my hip. I still have to get to those guns. So if I can get to those guns, then yes, they're both very good choices. A 5.56 is killer and freaking inside a house. I mean, a 300 blackout. You know, a buddy of mine recently hit me up and he's like, "Hey man, I'm trying to pick the best self-defense gun. I want to use a long gun." I'm like, "Okay, what do you got?" He's like, "Okay, I have a suppressed 7.5-inch 300 blackout AR." That's pretty sweet. Okay, what else you got? I have just a suppressed 10.5-inch 5.56 AR. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have a 9mm MPX. I haven't suppressed it yet, but I could. And I go, "Okay." He goes, "What would you want?" And I go, "What do you want?" You know, he's like, "That's not why I'm calling you." I go, "Okay. I would take the 300 blackout. Because it's shorter, it's easier to maneuver, and it's 30 caliber.
Mm-hmm.
And you're running it suppressed like it's supposed to be, so it's going to be nice and quiet if you're shooting subs.
Mm-hmm.
Dude, that's a killer round. It's going to do a great job inside your house. And where he lives, it works. You know, now if you lived in an apartment, might not be the best choice, right? But where he lives, it's perfect. I'm like, "Dude, that's a perfect gun." And he's got some close quarters experience, real world shit. And I'm like, "Yeah, that's what I would choose." And he's like, "Yeah, that's what I was thinking." Well, what are you fucking asking me? Like that would be the choice that I would take in a situation like that.
Mm-hmm.
People go like, "Well, I heard a shotgun." And it's usually guys saying this to women. "You get that shotgun there, honey. You pump that action. If it doesn't scare them off, you just aim at the door they're coming through. Blam, give it to them. You blow the arm off."
Blam.
None of that shit is true. None of what I just said is true.
Explosive
pump actions don't scare people away. Okay, it's not the pump action that scares people away. It's the fact that you have a firearm and they're not committed to violence.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Don't project your reality of being scared of getting shot onto your opponent who does not think, act, live, grow up, etc. like you.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So don't project on them. Right? Would I rather have a shotgun? Yeah, it's fucking devastating, man. It's a devastating round. Why wouldn't I rather have a shotgun? Well, most of them, unless I'm shooting a semi-automatic, require both hands.
Mm-hmm.
Right, to shoot and pump the action.
Say, I'd love mine, but mine's definitely a bird gun.
Mm-hmm.
That thing would not. I would telegraph my position.
You got a long ass barrel.
Oh, here
on
he
that
comes.
Thing.
Oh, he's still coming. Oh,
if I was a barricaded in a position, like for example, I keep a shotgun in my bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
Right, Because if I'm going to barricade in my room or at the top of my stairs, you know, if I can make sure my kids are safe, everyone's either in my room or I'm holding down the top of the staircase, a long gun is perfect. And a shotgun is great. Not because it has a big old pattern, because it inside of typical engagement distances, inside of 7 yards, the pattern is not big. It's tight. It's like the size of my fist or less, depending on what I'm shooting. So it's a very, very tight pattern. So it's not like it opens up my capability to hit, but it's devastating. It's a freaking sledgehammer, man. You know, so it's going to put someone on a path of changing behavior. Not going to kill them, definitely, right? Just I could hit someone in the chest with a load of buckshot, and it's not going to definitely kill them. It is definitely going to be better than trying to shoot them several times in the chest with my handgun, because that's several times I have to shoot them. One load of buckshot, it delivers 9 double-aught buck pellets in a very tight area. It removes parts of people's bodies if you hit them appropriately, or at least doesn't like blow an arm off, but it's going to blow some flesh off, right? It's definitely going to affect their internal working systems as long as my shot placement is appropriate, not just aiming at the doorway. And if you're using birdshot for self-defense, here's what I want you to do. I want you to stop listening to the show because you're not my people, all right? Stop doing that shit, all right? Birdshot is not for self. I don't care what your uncle told you. I don't care if your brother was a SEAL and he said it was a good idea. He's a fucking moron, all right? Whoever told you to do that does not know what the hell they're talking about, and they have no idea what it's like to be involved in a situation where the life is the prize. I'm not shooting someone with birdshot because they're not a bird. If I get attacked by a shitload of quail, birdshot is a good choice. And even then, you know, anyone who's ever shot birds, whether from ducks to quail, knows that when you go up to the animal and you pick them up, their feathers have stopped some of those BBs. Like, you'll pick up a bird and BBs will fall off of them and fall out of their feathers. What do you think is going to happen when you hit somebody? And then there's like the great thing where people go, well, so it doesn't overpenetrate walls. Well, dumb shit. If it doesn't pass through drywall, what do you think else it might not go through? Like, you know, human tissue? Come on. Think about it, man. My job, well, then it'll blind them. Oh, God. Is that what you're here to do? You're here to blind bad guys? You point guns at bad guys to blind them? Yeah, then they'll run out of the house. They can't. They're blind, you idiot. By your definition. And just because you shoot someone with birdshot doesn't mean they're going to be blind. Morons.
Yeah, birdshot doesn't stop mammals. Always.
And they hit them and they go, oh. Oh, yeah. 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 Dave recently tried to shoot a large caliber mammal with a small caliber or a birdshot. It didn't work out very well.
I just inconvenienced it.
He was like, no, stop. But I mean, dude, it's like, oh, the stuff that flies around the internet, travels across gun store counters and everything else, just blows my mind. You know, you're like, oh, God, so don't, please don't, okay? Do not use birdshot of any kind in your self-defense gun unless you need to defend yourself against birds. Other than that.
If that happens.
All right. Great. Don't use birdshot.
Everybody look.
Right. Buckshot is appropriate. Slugs are maybe a little overkill based on your situation. There's some situations where if I was going to use a shotgun for home defense or self-defense, I would freaking put slugs in it. Bears, for example.
Kill their whole family line.
If I was a guide in Alaska, a big game guide or a fishing guide, and I was going to carry a self-defense gun with me, it would be a 12-gauge shotgun loaded to the hilt with slugs, with a side saddle that has more slugs on it and some more slugs somewhere else located on my body within easy reach.
Yeah.
Why? Because it's a huge freaking bullet that's incredibly freaking heavy and does an amazing amount of energy transfer on target. And if I need to shut down a bear, I want that. Or if I need to shut down a charging moose, I want that. If I run upon some crazy pot grower in the backwoods, I want slugs because they'll reach out to 100, 150 yards easy, right? Even with a bead sight on a pump action shotgun, you can accurately hit torso targets easily out to 100 yards and beyond with some practice, right? We do it in our shotgun class every time. Blows people's minds. So I would choose that. That's when I would choose slugs for self-defense. If I lived on a ranch in the middle of nowhere, I'd probably take an AR because if someone's coming all the way out to mess with me, then that means they're probably not alone. They might have some distance in their advantage, and so I want a rifle. So I'm probably going to take an AR, maybe in 5.56, maybe in 300 black, maybe in 308, maybe in 7.62 by 3.9. Maybe I'll freaking choose an AK if I like that more. Mm-hmm. But I want a semi-automatic, you know, gas-operated carbine. How about that? Mm-hmm. You know, magazine-fed. That's what I want. So your situation is going to dictate what the best, quote-unquote, self-defense gun for you. What's the best self-defense gun for me personally? A pistol. Because I have one on me right now. You have one on you right now. We can easily carry them pretty much everywhere we go.
Yep.
I can take them with me just about anywhere. I can conceal them about my person and no one needs to know that they're there. I can easily access it in just about any environment. I can easily access if someone's on top of me. I can easily access it if I'm fighting somebody. I can easily access it inside of a car, inside of my house, inside of just about any place. And it's the gun I can take with me. Is it the best self-defense gun? You're damn right it is, because it's the one that I'm always going to have available. Do I love the fact that it's a 9mm? No. Do I love the fact that it's a handgun caliber of any kind? No, I don't. Handgun calibers are weak. They consistently fail to kill people. They might change some behavior for sure, but they consistently fail to kill people. So why do I carry it? Because it's the best for my situation. Mm-hmm. So what's the best self-defense gun?
There you go.
Whatever suits your situation. Mm-hmm. What's the best caliber? What are you doing with it? What are you trying to accomplish? Mm-hmm. Right? Pick a caliber that's easily available, affordable, effective.
What's more important than the tools that you carry?
Mentality.
Skills.
Your skills, your will.
Everything.
Your mentality, your training. Like Tom Givens says, right? It's not how much you trained. It's when was the last time you trained or practice. He says practice. I'll put in the word trained. So if you were in the military 15 years ago, 10 years ago, 5 years ago, and you haven't done anything since then, no one gives a shit about what your perceived skill level is. Right? Like anything else. I played basketball a couple months ago. I haven't played basketball in years.
I just know I'm not built for basketball.
Oh my gosh. I was terrible.
I bet.
Oh my gosh.
That doesn't surprise
you. You know who's not terrible? Jay.
Really?
Turns out he was on a state championship team and schooled me, Josh, and Nico on pretty much everything we did.
Wow.
Kicking our ass with these freaking 3-point hook shots and all this bullshit he all of a sudden started doing. We're just horsing around at this competition. There's a basketball field. We were up in Wyoming for the team comp. There's this basketball court at the place we were staying. And we're like, wouldn't it be fun to play some basketball? We don't have anything else to do during matches, you know? So we're up there and we're like shooting and I'm missing. I'm definitely the worst out of everyone. There was no doubt about that. But I'm not a basketball player. I didn't really play a lot growing up. And I certainly literally haven't played for years. I pick up a basketball for years. And so I'm trying to throw like a softball, you know what I mean? It's like sort of kind of getting in the general direction I want it to go. And you know, other guys doing it. Jay just is like, let me show you guys a couple things. Starts playing. What the hell is this crap? We start playing horse and around the world. So we're just getting worked by him. Absolutely just worked by that dude. So shocker.
Shock.
Jay's amazing at basketball.
So there you go.
Anyway. Yeah, you wouldn't look at him either and think, you know, he's this middle-aged white guy, you know what I mean? He's not going to just school us, you know? Yeah, whatever. He totally beat the shit out of us, but anyway. All right. Remember, you can bring us out to train with you. Hosting information, info@trainingaz.com. And again, if you want that ballistics report I mentioned, email me and I'll send it to you. Message us on Instagram or Patreon or whatever. We'll make sure it gets sent to you. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram as The Arms Room Show, Independence Training, and Red Wire Gear, even though John wasn't here for this show. We'll still want you guys to follow him. We're proud members of the Heroes Media Group. Make sure you check out the other shows that they have on the network. And next week, we will be live again.
Yeah.
Right? We will be live. We know you guys like the live shows. We get a lot of comments about it, but we apologize. We couldn't be live this week. We do have some other things we had going on. You know, we have to do this from time to time. Mm-hmm. Heads up, we got a lot of pre-recorded shows coming up in I think October. Mm-hmm. Almost all of them are pre-recorded because we just have a crazy training schedule and travel schedule for several different events, and we just cannot be here as much as we want. But we try to do as many live shows as we possibly can. Try to pre-record the least amount of shows. But next week, we will be live. And our topic next week is going to be the new TCCC guidelines, the new Tactical Combat Casualty Care guidelines that were recently released, and the evolution and advancements of dirt medicine, especially over the last couple of years. So what are we seeing that's different? What are we seeing that's new? The new TCCC guidelines released some stuff that I'm like, which once was old is new again, because we're doing techniques that we stopped doing for a while, but we're back to doing them because maybe they work better than we thought they did. When we stopped doing them, people, that, you know, fatality rate went up. We thought, oh, this doesn't work. And then we stopped doing it and people died more. We're like, oh shit, that really
worked.
That was working more than we thought. So we'll be talking about that next week. Until then, stay safe and train hard. You've been listening to The Arms Room.